You're listening to From the Midlands, the stories of people making a difference across the region. Our presenter is Gail Downing.
Family law is often seen as the last resort when all else has failed. But for lawyer Richard Port from the Midlands, it's become a purpose. Richard was recently awarded the MBE for services for domestic abuse victims. And he joins us on From the Midlands. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
Tell us about the MBE.
So I was awarded, I think it was 2021, for legal services of domestic abuse victims. Yeah, it's still a bit of a shock to me now, in all honesty. But it was awarded for the work that I've been doing with refugees for since probably when I was like 23, 22.
About 10 years.
Then. 10 years. Yeah. And yeah, it's a big, humble privilege for me to have that.
And what made you decide to go into family law? Because it's not seen as the most glamorous side of the legal profession, is it?
I think I fell into it, in all honesty. I did a few cases when I was a trainee. So originally, I was asking for a case, for some advocacy. I trained on the bar course. I came back to do my training contract. And my boss at the time gave me a non-molestation case. So I'd worked with a client, she was a service user at a refuge, and I spoke to the refuge and they said, we've had no training on family law, we don't know anything about legal aid. So I trained them up, and then I saw there was quite a few solicitors representing perpetrators, and they were pulling tricks, legal tricks, nothing against the law, to try and win family cases. And I just thought, well, if they're doing that as perpetrators, then why can't victims do the same? So I turned the tables on them. And I just fell into it. I enjoy helping clients. I don't like bullies in any shape or form, which I'm quite open and passionate about. But it's something that kind of gets me out of bed in the morning and something that I'm really passionate to fight for.
And when we talk about domestic abuse cases, give me a range that you deal with.
So domestic abuse as a whole can stem from physical abuse all the way to emotional, financial, sexual. So the days before where we kind of label domestic abuse as being primarily that it's just physical. You've got a person being hit by their partner or by family or neighbour. It doesn't fall into that anymore. Now it's opened up, and thankfully that's all the work that's been done by different organisations, different groups. The courts now are accepting that domestic abuse isn't just physical, there's the emotional side, there's the financial side, but we've still got some more work to do, because as much as we kind of hope the courts kind of take it on board and the police take it on board, there's still this big stereotype that actually victims of domestic abuse, unless you've got a black eye or you've got a physical mark to show that you've been abused, it didn't really happen.
So there is still this stereotype that if you can't see a mark on somebody, then it didn't happen.
Yeah, so I think that the problem we face, especially in the family courts, is as much as we say we're open to emotional abuse, control and coercive behaviour, there is still this kind of thing that overhangs us that unless we see a mark, unless we see a bruise, then there couldn't have been domestic abuse. What's that phrase that's saying where if you don't see a tree fall in the forest, did it even fall? So I'm trying to push and hope that we can get rid of this stereotype. And I know a lot of victims, they're quite scared of coming forward because they say, well, I've got no mark and I've got no evidence. I've got nothing to show physically that I've been a victim. But when you start going into their life, the story about what's happened, you realise that actually, well, it doesn't have to be a physical mark. There doesn't have to be abuse. And I don't want to say it because, again, it's kind of giving perpetrators credit. But we've moved away from the dumb perpetrators. We've moved away from the perpetrators that kind of go, I've punched or I've kicked. They're getting cleverer. They're evolving in a way. Still not very smart but for doing it in the first place, but their tactics and the strategy of how they control and they abuse victims, it's getting two steps ahead. My kind of ethos is being four steps ahead. So I'm pushing to make sure and have that awareness that victims know that they can come forward. Just because they don't have this mark doesn't mean they're not being abused or have been abused. And it is tricky sometimes because you talk to people and the penny doesn't drop until actually you talk to them more about what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable. And it's it's good to see when actually eventually they realise they have been in an abusive relationship, because that's the first stage for them to get out and for them to be able to build up and break the cycle even further.
How much does social media play a role in this, particularly in terms of coercive control?
Well, you've got the positive and you've got the negative. If we say positive-wise about helping victims establish that they're being victims of domestic abuse, I know a lot of organisations have done big campaigns to try and show and help victims understand that they are victims. Because the main issue that we have with victims is that they don't realise they're victims. They accept the behaviour, not because they think, well, this is it, I've got to accept it. They don't realise it's not acceptable behaviour.
So does it become normalised?
Yes. We're doing a big push at the moment to have, say, training in schools to start early on to show children what isn't right and what is right. Because we have this big argument, it's a generation thing, that domestic abuse happened previously and therefore it was okay back in the day, so therefore it's okay if it's that generation. But the problem is children learn from their parents, they see from their parents, and if they believe that actually it's acceptable, then they're either going to accept the abuse themselves or they're going to inflict the abuse on their partners. So social media is good in trying to promote and help victims. But if we look at the negative in regards to social media, it's a massive tool now, especially technology in itself, that perpetrators can use technology to control and monitor and watch exactly what their victim's doing. I've known a few cases where they've put tracking devices on telephones, and it's easy for them to do. So what I do when I get clients come in, if they've come straight from an abusive relationship, we just do a whole total wipe through the phone just to make sure there's no tracking devices, that passwords are changed on all social media. Because even if you turn your tracker off on your phone, you'll still pop up on exactly one on social media where you've been, or history of what location you've been into. So technology, as much as it's a great thing to promote and help victims, it can be a victim's worst nightmare, because it's basically a living prison. You're outside of your home, but you can still be in a prison in a way that you're panicking where you are and who you're with.
Now, you're a partner in the law firm George Green, and you run the domestic abuse, the family law department. It's, as I mentioned earlier, it's not really seen as the most glamorative or even the most lucrative, to put it brutally.
Yeah.
How have you managed to encourage other partners to see that this is really important?
George Green have been amazing. So when I first started out, I'd worked for Whitestone Williams in Derby, and my old boss, Kevin O'Donnell, his late brother John, and then David Williams, they were just really supportive of everything. They knew the potential. It's about helping people. It's not about the money side. It's not about the glamorous side of it all. It's about making a difference, and that's why I got into law in the first place. But George Green, we were all about helping people, whatever way we can, and they've just been really supportive. I've come up with projects and ideas to try and help the community, help victims. We just did a screening of the film Love by Sam Beckinsale a few weeks ago for International Women's Week, and it was brilliant. And it's a very hard-hitting film to try and show the feelings and thoughts behind a victim, but we're all for the community, we're all here to help. And at the end of the day, as a lawyer, and as lawyers ourselves, you can be the lawyer that's more than happy to take someone's money for a job that they could have done themselves or they didn't need. I'm not that type of lawyer. I'd prefer that if I can help victims not be victims and get out of a horrible situation so they never have to see me, then I'd much prefer that than them having to come to me as the last resort to try and get the protection in place. But yeah, it's a big passion to help people, and that's why I got into law in the first place.
There's a stereotype, isn't there, of the, well, I'll talk about women here, although of course men also suffer domestic abuse, of the typical victim.
Yes.
That's not the case, is it?
I hate it, because again, it's back in the old days, you would have this big stereotype that it was working class, and it keeps getting thrown around that if you were a victim of domestic abuse, why don't you leave? Why don't you get out of it? You can't if you're being abused, you just walk away from the situation, and it's never the case. You can't walk away, and I have to keep reminding the courts, because that's the same old argument that's said time and time again by a perpetrator. Well, at the end of the day, if I was that bad, they would have left. So you just go, well, it doesn't work like that. It's not simple. With domestic abuse itself, the phrase that I use is that domestic abuse is a great believer in equal opportunities. It just doesn't discriminate in any shape or form. So I've got clients who are CEOs. I've got clients who have got first-class degrees and, well, more than first-class degrees. But it doesn't stop because of social background. It doesn't stop with money. It can affect everyone. So I've spoke to people, and they do have this big stereotype that it only affects a certain number of people. It's 1 in 5 adults are affected by domestic abuse, with 75% of those being women. And that's mad, because that can be your brother, your sister, your auntie, it can be anyone. And just because it's not in your face, because it's there and you can see it, again, with that analogy, that if a tree falls in the forest, did it ever happen? Well, it is happening, and that's the sadness. It's having to justify to people that domestic abuse is this big taboo that we don't talk about because it's not nice. It's not a nice thing to do, and it's not proper. So I go to like parties, and when people talk to me, and they go, well, what do you do for a living? And I go, oh, I'm a domestic abuse lawyer. And I'm like, that's nice. Great speaking to you. Have a great night. I'm not the person that they kind of want to talk to about lovely depressing things, but it's something that we need to talk about. And rather than making it a taboo subject, a subject that's so negative that we kind of go, we don't talk about that. It doesn't exist. It never happens. We need to kind of take back the power, because as soon as you make something a taboo subject, perpetrators have got the power then, because they can get away with it, because they'll say, well, my victim's never going to talk about it because the neighbour down the road, they're going to be embarrassed to talk about domestic abuse. So she won't talk, or he won't talk about it. So we have to take that back, that conversation, that topic, to ensure that it is an open subject. Workplaces are talking about it. Schools are talking about it. So that people can feel more comfortable trying to talk about domestic abuse if they are facing it. And again, it's, like I say, 1 in 5. So it's not as if it's a very, very, very minority. It's most people in society that face it in one way or another in their lifetime. So it's getting rid of it. And as soon as we start talking about it more, then the power's gone for the perpetrator.
Some of the first cases you dealt with, you mentioned your old boss who won the award. Mm. As a trainee, he sent you out dealing with cases with refugees, didn't he?
Yes, yeah.
What was that like as a 24-year-old?
So I used to have to travel up and down Derbyshire. I remember a few times driving in the snow to get to the refuges. But we were laughing about it last Friday because he says, you were never in the office. You were always out at a different refuge. And he says, I barely saw you. But I enjoyed doing it because, again, it was free advice, but it was helping people and it was dealing head-on with an issue, because the law world in itself and family courts, as much as we're trying to make it transparent and we're trying to talk about it and make it accessible for people, it's not accessible in any way. There's still things in place where people don't know how to fill in an application form. They don't know about the requirements for the exemption for mediation. So a lot of people nowadays, they're too scared to make applications. They're too scared to take it to court because, again, no one wants to be labelled as a victim. No one wants that big sticky mark on their forehead as they walk in. They just want a normal, simple life. So I like the fact I can be there for victims and talk to them and give them advice. So what I've done in the local area is the refugees can contact me for a second opinion, or they can just kind of put some ideas across, because there are some lawyers out there who are good, and there's some shocking lawyers who are out there who aren't providing the proper advice or aren't providing the proper service. So I want to make sure that victims are on the level playing field as perpetrators, so they can make sure they're protected, the children are protected, and that they've got assets with a divorce, etc., and they're not living hand to mouth.
You said earlier you really dislike bullying.
Yeah.
Where does all this come from?
I think really from childhood. I've dealt with bullies, I've dealt with idiots. So yeah, I think it just stems from that area.
So were you bullied as a child?
I had a few bullies, but then I think I just stepped up to the mark. But I just don't like it when people kind of take advantage of a situation, or they, again, I've had cases where I've been to court and I've had one guy swear at me just before the court hearing, and you don't swear back, you don't shout. Once you've raised your voice, you've lost it then. You just take control of the situation and you do best for your client. But I just, yeah, I can't stand bullies. And this is the thing I've said with the cases that I do, I am classed as bad cop in the office. Because the thing is, once you give a perpetrator an inch, they take a mile. As much as we're here to try and be amicable with each other, if I've got a client who's had a head smashed in a patio door, and I'm being told we need to be nice about a whole situation, I'm thinking, no, I'm here to protect children. I'm here to protect my client. I'm not here to make friends. I'm not here to kind of bend over backwards to a perpetrator, because in the day, you give them an inch, they take a mile. So I'm just here to make sure my client's protected and that the children are protected.
Looking forward, looking yes. to the future, what is it that you want to build? Because clearly you're a partner at George Green. Mm. How do you see this working in 10 years' time? What's your ideal?
I don't have the solution for domestic abuse. So that's the problem. And it's a weird one, because people ask me, they'll say, well, what should we do? Well, how do we solve all this? What's the thing to fix it all? And I don't know. We can put as much training as possible for school children. We can put rehabilitation in for perpetrators. But then the issue we've got with that, and I have problems with the rehabilitation. We send perpetrators on what used to be called building better relationships, and basically getting a room full of perpetrators together who will then give tips and tricks on how they abuse their partners. There was a book called The Freedom Programme, and that's the Bible that we've used to help victims establish that they are victims, understand the abuse that they've been through. And that was based on someone who was a prison guard, and she just listened to all the inmates boast about how they abused their partners and how they would have done it. Don't punch her in the face. Next time, punch her in the side because you can hide a mark. Or don't do that because the police will find out. Just make sure you hide this and this. So again, there's ways that look great on paper to try and help victims. But the problem I have, and I use another analogy, you give a victim a shield, like the Domestic Abuse Bill and the Victim Abuse Act, but the perpetrator uses it as a sword. And the issue that we face now more in court is, if you make an application, you're the victim, 9 out of 10 times your perpetrator will go in gaslighting, saying, woe is me, I'm the victim in all of this. And then you're having to then tackle those allegations.
And without physical proof, I guess that's even harder.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people try and campaign and say that once domestic abuse is raised in the family courts, then it should be a zero tolerance, contact stopped. And I'm against that, because you can't do that. You can't say, well, as soon as domestic abuse is raised, that's stopped altogether, because you think there are many victims that go into court and they're accused of being the perpetrator, they wouldn't be able to see the children for months on end. So we have to take a fine line. We can't take a one-size-fits-all approach. But yeah, it's a tricky one. For me personally, I'm going to carry on standing on my soapbox and shouting from the rooftop to help victims. I've got a few projects that I'm helping with different organisations, but I just want to raise awareness. And I'm really humble for the MBE, and I've tried to use it to just help victims more and talk about it. But like talking to yourself today, it's just giving me the opportunity to raise awareness when it's not a nice topic. It's not a topic that you would be invited to talk about openly and to talk about positive news. But I'm just trying to take back the conversation, take back the issue, that we don't just have it as this kind of news article that's a shocking thing that we have it as the flavour of the month every so often, or when someone dies. A victim dies and we go, well, we need to talk about domestic abuse. It needs to be something that we talk about all the time. It's something that's not a bad topic, nothing that we kind of push at the back of our minds, just forget about because it doesn't help us for the day. It's having those conversations with family and friends, if you see any worries, you see any problems, and it's being happy to, if you feel that you're a victim or you know you're a victim, it's having the conversations with family and friends and yourself or with your workplace to say, look, I'm worried this is happening. I don't know whether it's right or whether it's wrong. And having the confidence to speak to the police about it. Because again, I know a few people have spoken to the police and they feel that they've been disregarded, but not all officers are the same. And there's always a way around it. There's always a way to push forward with it. And again, I know more training's being done with the police. I did training with West Mercia a few weeks ago. And again, I think it was eye-opening for them to realise what victims face. There's a lot of procedure they have to go through, but it's trying to tackle the procedure and say, well, look, procedure is procedure, but you've got to kind of think of a human aspect to this. Not everyone kind of comes to you and says, by the way, I'm a victim. Here's all my evidence in a nice little box, and this is what I need you to do. You need to unpick the pieces. You need to kind of go into it all and try and establish what's happened and whether actually there is domestic abuse there. Because, like I say, no one wants the label. No one wants to be seen as a victim until it's too late.
Richard Port, MBE, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to From the Midlands, a Whirlwind production. If you've enjoyed listening and would like to sponsor this series of podcasts, details are available on our website at fromthemidlands.co.uk.